Good afternoon, and welcome to SEI's podcast series, ETF Revolution, a podcast focused on all things ETFs. I'm Bill Arnold, Regional ETF Director with SEI. Joining me today is our featured guest, Eric Balchunas, who works for Bloomberg as a senior ETF analyst. Eric regularly appears on various outlets speaking about the ETF market and has written some books, including the Institutional ETF Toolbox, and recently, a book called The Bogle Effect, How John Bogle and Vanguard Turn Wall Street Inside Out and Save Investors Trillions. Eric, welcome to SEI's podcast series, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Great to be with you, Bill.
So I would like to just hear your thoughts on how the ETF industry got started. What was the reason why ETFs took a little time before they started to get bigger and bigger? But would love to hear your thoughts on the genesis of the ETF industry.
Yeah, sure. I really noticed ETFs were going to be a big deal about 2006. I was assigned to cover them from a data standpoint at Bloomberg. And as somebody who had written about mutual funds back in my day at Fund Action for Institutional Investor, and I knew mutual funds, when I saw the ETF, I thought this was like five evolutionary steps forward, like from CD to MP3 kind of deal. And I was like dedicated my whole career to it. That's how much I knew this was a good structure, or I bet it was. I wasn't sure, but boy, did that wave break. And the reason I saw when I kicked the tires on ETFs back then and said, man, I'm going to be the ETF expert at Bloomberg. I really think this is the tool for the future, the 21st century vehicle. The big reasons are the multitude of advantages, right? I said it takes five steps forward. Sort of like when you get an Uber, is five. It's better than a cab for five ways. It's not just one tiny evolution
sure.
step, right? So with ETFs, the main thing is they sort of democratize everything easily. It's easy to get an ETF. They're on every brokerage platform, right? Everybody has access to them. So, and they bring everything to you with one click. You can do whatever you want. Mutual funds do that a little bit. ETFs also, they trade intraday. So you can get the price you want at the time you want. This is arguably also one of their, one of the things people worry about, because you can trade, will you trade? But as long as you can control yourself, that's a good thing, I think, that you can trade them intraday. And the other thing is the tax efficiency. This is a biggie for taxable accounts. They rarely give you a capital gains distribution. You're only taxed when you sell. I think mutual funds should be taxed like that too. I feel like ETFs are the right way. Not like a loophole. Mutual funds just have a bad situation over there because they, when someone leaves a fund, the manager has to sell stocks or bonds to cash them out, and that can create a taxable event. ETFs, through the creation redemption process, are able to sort of avoid that. So you only are taxed when you sell, which I think is fair.
Eric, you mentioned creation redemption. Would you please explain a little bit more about that? I know sometimes people have apprehension, or they definitely have concerns about it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the creation redemption process.
Yeah, it's like this biblical sounding term, and it's in my first book I compare it to the flux capacitor in Back to the Future. It's sort of how, in that case, it's how time travel happens in the DeLorean. This is how ETFs work their magic. I'll break it down very quickly because I have to teach new hires on ETFs. And when I get to creation redemption, over the years I'd find they fall asleep or their eyes gloss over.
Sure.
And they didn't get it, and I'd get marked up in the review. So I kept trying to figure out how to get them to understand. And here's what I did. I told the story, and I'll be very brief. Nate Most worked at the American Stock Exchange. He's the father of the ETF. And they were looking for some way to get trading on Amex. And they thought, well, what if we get a mutual fund that trades? So they go to Bogle. He says no. But, over the process of trying to figure out this new vehicle, Nate Most gets the idea that, hey, if we design this sort of like a commodities warehouse, which he was the chairman of the Pacific Commodities Exchange, and he saw a commodities warehouse live. So in a commodities warehouse, let's say you have a bunch of soybean oil. You go put it in a locker. They give you a receipt. Then you can trade soybean oil receipts all day without moving the merchandise, right, or with other commodities. And let's say you get a bunch of soybean oil receipts and you want to cash it in. You go to the locker, give them receipts, you get a bunch of soybean oil. This is very much easier than trading a bunch of physical stuff back and forth. So all he did was take that concept and instead of soybean oil, it's the S&P 500 stocks or a basket of bonds. So that's why SPDR, the first ETF, is S&P Depository Receipts. So we say ETFs are kind of like a receipt. And the creation redemption, handing in the 500 stocks for SPY receipts, no money actually changed hands. That's called in kind. That's why there's no taxable event when an ETF is that helps ETFs have greater tax efficiency because it's not money exchanging hands there. I also like that they eliminate the share class system of mutual funds. You basically get the institutional class fee, which is great. Mutual funds to me are like a regressive tax system. The less you have, the more they charge you, right? The A class is the most, and then the I class is the best deal. ETFs are like the I class for everybody. So like I said, there's democratization all across the board. And so what you've seen is a lot of innovation has come here. And I like that it's a big tent. You've got everything from the sort of vanilla, low-cost, Vanguard Bogle side of the tent, which takes in the majority of the flows. And then you've got the wild and crazy stuff and then everything in between. And now people are putting active strategies in ETF. There's smart beta. There's themes. It is a fun market to cover, I got to say. There's never a dull moment.
Right. So what I'm hearing from you is that the investor ends up keeping full control over their investment decisions. That's what I tend to talk about when I'm talking to either if it's institutions or individuals, that the investor retains full control of their investment decisions. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So in my first book, I talk about asset allocation. ETFs make asset allocation so easy. And the idea that the end investor is the decider, whether it's you or your advisor, they're putting ETFs into like your portfolio is like a pie and each ETF has a percentage. Those decisions are honestly the most important active decisions you make. So let's say ETFs, so you're making active decisions with largely passive ETFs, but the percentage you pick for your equity, for your international, for your real estate, for your bonds, those are crucial decisions. And that is how, you're right, the end investor gets to control that. So I think ETFs allow people to sort of view the world more like an economist now rather than a bottom-up fundamental stock picker, because people have realized it's really hard to know everything. Like if you want exposure to, say, China, what are you going to do, research every China stock? No, you just buy the China ETF, makes it very easy. You can't hit a home run that way because diversification is good for eliminating your downside, but you'll never hit a home run, but you won't strike out, right? Your diversification is going to save you from anything that could blow up. So a lot of people are willing to make that sacrifice. Okay, fine, I won't pick the perfect stock and beat everybody, but at least I won't lose because I don't want to have my bet on China be right, but I picked the wrong stock. And who has time to research everything? And how are you going to know more than people on Wall Street who do this all day, every day? So a lot of people have sort of thrown their hands up in that and just sort of do active, more like an economist. They view the world and asset classes, and they just put ETFs into sort of like puzzle pieces in their portfolio, and they shift them from time to time. Even institutions do this. It's almost like those equalizers on a stereo. They go up a little bit, down a little bit, and ETFs make that very easy. And so that, to me, is how people, the modern portfolio and investing has really evolved over the years, rather than, yes, outsourcing it to somebody else.
So that, of course, is talking about the end investor or the institution that is owning the ETFs. Over the last year or two, I've talked to a number of firms that they currently run, whether they're SMAs or CITs, some other investment mutual fund. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the conversion from an existing structure to an ETF. How hard is it? Are there challenges with that? Certainly there's challenges with a lot of things because it's dealing with the ETF ecosystem. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on firms that have done that and what you think is a good means for them to be able to do that.
Yeah, sure. No, this is some real plumbing type question. And I don't do this every day. So it's like asking me like how my sink works a little bit, because there is some plumbing that I admit I'm a little ignorant to. But we had, I think it was American Beacon. I hope I don't mess that name up. But we had that guy on our podcast called Trillions. And we interviewed him for 45 minutes on, he was the first ever conversion. He was sort of like Dolly, that, you know, the first clone sheep.
Sure.
So we were like, we got to talk to Dolly. So we went through every step of that. Anyway, that might be interesting for people to listen to just hear from an actual person who went through it. But he loved it. He thought he was in touch with a lot of his clients. Most of them were happy to do this. It wasn't a big deal. He did have to check a bunch of boxes, but he eventually checked all those boxes, worked all the kinks out, and then just moved it over and felt good doing it. And you know, the benefit of converting, in my opinion, is there's a couple big benefits. One is you are now where the fish are biting. right? All the flows go to ETFs. You can't fish in a lake where there's no fish. It just doesn't make sense, right? So after last year in particular, people got more interested in ETFs, even the biggest holdouts. Like Morgan Stanley's probably the best example. Now they're going to launch ETFs. They tried DI. They tried to hold out. But after last year, almost a trillion went into ETFs. They're like, all right, we're just going to have to do this. So Morgan Stanley was like sort of like the last, the Alamo of the holdouts. And it's finally going to launch ETFs. That should tell you a lot. Second thing is you come over with assets, a track record, and most importantly, dignity. If you try to clone your existing strategy and put an ETF out, it's tough because unless you're dirt cheap or shiny, like the Kathy Wood Lane, it's tough to get assets and flows. And you sit there and you don't get any flows for a while, and then you start to get a stank on you, like, oh my gosh, because people do want to see some assets in a fund before they buy. It's just the way it is. And so we found some of the clone ETFs that come out, like the Fidelity Magellan clone is a great example. And that comes in with a huge brand name. Nobody bought it. Now, if it had come into the ETF world, like DFA, it basically converted a bunch of big ETFs, funds into ETFs. It's now the 10th largest issuer. It's all of a sudden a force. It's all of a sudden got this respect. And
in
again,
the industry.
Yeah, and because you've got all these assets. Assets is marketing. And I get the clone thing. You have to have a lot of confidence. But if you come out with a sort of closet indexing active strategy that's, you know, benchmark aware, above 30 basis points, you're gonna struggle. And that's where a lot of the mutual fund world is and the SMA world. So I think when you come over with to the ETF world, you get to bring all that. Plus, there is a tax benefit too, because you come over, now you can start using the creation redemption process to limit your capital gains distributions. And so that's another benefit as well. So I would say for all those reasons, we're bullish on conversions more than any other analyst, I think. Ours is the most bullish. We think $1 trillion worth of assets is going to convert by the end of the decade, and we think it's going to involve hundreds of funds. Now, so far, $60 billion has converted, so you can see that's a pretty bold prediction. But you know, we're talking 7-8 years. I think I might have underestimated it.
Do you foresee more of the quote unquote active managers, not just the quasi active, passive, or close to, or index hugging, I guess is what you refer to.
Benchmark aware is benchmark the sort of aware. Winnie the Pooh with the monocle on kind of term.
So do you foresee more of the true active managers coming into the space, maybe a little less of the holdings not looking like a benchmark?
Yeah. So here's what we're seeing. Like, if you convert your mutual fund over, what you do is you take care of the people who are with you now. They're going to have a better fund, a better product, tax efficient, and you have a line in the water where the fish are biting. Will you get bites? We don't know. Now, what I also see them doing is then moving over and maybe trying ETFs that are a little different than their funds. Like maybe their 20 best ideas. We do find there's a viable lane. We call it the shiny object lane or the hot sauce lane. And one of the things I go over in the Bogle effect is the Bogle effect isn't just, oh, all this money's going to passive. It's that the rise of passive is changing everything, and it's changing active. The more passive grows and is the core of the portfolio, the more people are looking for something actually the opposite to decorate it with. That's kind of where Kathy Wood lives and why she's been so durable despite her underperformance. Thematic ETFs have been a big hit here. So what we think is going to happen is active managers will convert their existing mutual funds so at least they can give their investors a better deal and maybe avoid them leaving. Right? So that's a defensive move. Then they go offense by launching maybe high volatile concentrated versions of themselves. So you have let's say you have a boring 60-40 passive core. Well, you're not going to put on a closet indexing active on top of that because you already own Apple and JP Morgan, all these stocks.
That makes sense.
So what you want though is something that's different and maybe the 20 best ideas of a manager. So we think that is going to be where active goes. So as we say, the bigger passive gets, the more active is going to get, which I think they're happier with. I've talked to managers. The idea of holding like 300 stocks and like adjusting your Amazon between 2 and 3%, I can't imagine that's a happy existence for you. Right. What's more interesting is these are my 20 best ideas and put that out there. And I think this is a good thing for active. I think it'll make active better. So the rise of passive, I think, shouldn't be feared but embraced by active. So I do think that's sort of what we're going to see going forward. And in a company, if you were going to study a company, I would study JP Morgan. They're the ones I think who have gotten it the best in terms of converting what they can and then setting up an ETF division with an ETF person and letting them sort of run wild a little bit. They've been very successful. They're a good blueprint.
That's great information. I guess as a good segue, what types of new products are you seeing coming into the ETF market, you know, within the last, call it year and a half?
Real, it's wild stuff.
I'm sure.
You've got single security ETFs, which is an oxymoron, right?
And leveraged,
how can it be
right?
a fund? And it's like jumbo shrimp, single stock ETFs. So that's one whole wing that's opening up. That's we're already seeing, you know, 40 or 50 of those launch and another 100 filed. Then you've got your typical slew of thematic ETFs. Then we've got defined outcome ETFs are pretty big. Those are use options to sort of like say, oh, if the market goes down, you only experience 5%. The next 10% will be covered by the option protection. And so option overlay strategies, I call those package trades, or they're kind of like structured products. That's a whole wing opening up because people will pay up for legwork. If you'd go through all that effort to like design this outcome for them, they'll pay you for that. And so the ETF rules also allowed a little more derivative usage in ETFs, a little more liberal now. We also think alternatives are a space that's going to open up because the 60-40 is struggling this year. So there's a lane for non-correlated alt strategies. So things that replicate hedge fund returns or a hedge fund type like managed futures or global macro, long short, those are ones that I think we'll see more action in. Trying to think of what else is launched this year. And then we're seeing this whole culture war. The culture wars have bled into ETFs. So now you've got ETFs that are hardcore ESG and then a reaction, which is we're going to do everything that's anti-ESG.
Sure.
So ESG sort of like brought the culture wars into the ETF. Now there's this whole reaction to it. So you've got this like, you know, right-left kind of political ETF launches going on. That's a whole thing. So yeah, we're pretty busy, to say the least.
Absolutely. It sounds very, very interesting. And yeah, every day you see something new and a new idea. So as it relates to the company you work for, Bloomberg, what role does Bloomberg play in the ETF space? You know, what types of data and functions are available to new and existing ETF providers?
Yeah, so Bloomberg didn't do a ton back in the day. I was really pushing it inside. I had seen companies like Index Universe, Morningstar, right? They're getting more into ETFs. Like, we got to get involved this more. The good news is Bloomberg has so much going for it in terms of we have all the stocks in the system. We have intraday trading on every security. ETFs, once they get added, they automatically get out of the terminal. So we had the infrastructure set. All we needed is some frosting on the cake, which we did, and I helped do that. So now we have ETF-specific fields. We have a function called ETF Go, which you can easily sort and look for an ETF. Depending on what you're looking for. We have Port, which is like an X-ray machine for the portfolio of an ETF. You can find out where the returns are coming from, compare it to two ETFs together. We have BI ETF, which now is time series flows and asset data on all different things. And our team, we've designed a couple tools called like, one of them is called the Smart Beta Spectrum. So you take a bunch of value ETFs. We're going to tell you which ones are most aggressive and least aggressive. Because, you know, there's 100 of them and they all sound the same, but some are pretty jacked up. Like they hold only 30 stocks and they're like deep value. Then there's like Vanguard, which is like watered down barely value and everything in between. So we think what's needed for the ETF world is similar to when you go to buy a beer.
Yeah.
There's a percent alcohol. That's important information.
Yes.
Right? There's O'Doul's and then there's like the German like hardcore stuff, right? That's like 8%. You need to know this information and it's going to inform you as an investor. We're trying to do all this for ETFs in the terminal. And so that's generally what we have. But I think our clients tend to like pull up SPY or EEM. They look at where it's trading. They look at where they can get the best price on. So our terminal clients probably looking more in terms of trading and adjusting their portfolios. But we certainly run the gamut on tools we provide for ETF usage.
I always hear, you know, the term looking under the hood. I think that's what you're getting at with a tool like that, to be able to really understand what's in the ETF and be able to make your decisions accordingly.
There's so many ETFs. If there's 180 value ETFs, it's hard to look under the hood at every one. So that's why I think some kind of a quick advanced information beyond the name is important, which we're trying to do. So do you want hardcore value or watered down? Advisors like it watered down. We're not judging. But if value pops and is in vogue, the watered down stuff will lag the more concentrated stuff. So you'd have to know all this. So we want to at least get you to the right part of the shelf in the ETF store, so to speak, so that you can then look under the hood with five of them and not 180. So again, I do think we're trying to get you from 180 to five. Then you do the look under the hood stuff.
Well, Eric, it's been great information that you gave us. We really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for sharing your perspective and insights. We really appreciate your time and expertise.
Great to be here. Thank you.
For those listening, if you have any questions, please direct them to me. My contact details are included on the invitation to this episode. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes in our series. Thanks for tuning in.